It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. The best way to know that your weekend is underway when you join us here every Friday. I'm Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. And now Colin Jeffrey, our news director, sheds that role for just a moment and puts on the cape and the tights of his showbiz alter ego, Showbiz Boy. And we review movies and talk about other showbiz stuff. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul? Doing well, now that my mic's on. That's me.
We have a bunch of things to get to this week. There are actually six different movies opening today. Although, as Colin reminded you twice already in this month, it's August. It's not the good movie time of the year.
No.
So is this the last weekend they're dumping the bad movies, or will there be more next weekend?
It's going to be another one next week. Okay. Hey, there's hope for one next weekend, but yeah.
Now, I will tell you that sometimes Colin and I try to see the same movies so that we can compare notes on them. And then there are times when there are two different screenings for the press at the same time in different theaters. Mm-hmm. And that occurred this week with a movie called Hitman, Agent 47, and another one called American Ultra. And so I texted Colin and I said, your choice. I will go to either one of these. Which one do you want to see? And you chose American Ultra.
American Ultra, yes.
Leaving me with Hitman Agent 47. And let me start with this one.
Is that related to the video games?
Yes.
This is the second time they've tried to start this.
They tried it in 2007 as Hitman. It was a flop, apparently because there was no colon in the title. As you know, that makes a movie better.
Yes.
So Hitman, colon, Agent 47 is about agents who are essentially assassins who have been engineered to have no fear, no emotion, no attachments. They're human beings.
They're GMOs.
They're genetically modified organisms. You're exactly right. Who are only interested in killing their targets. That's it. And it starts with this Agent 47, played by Rupert Friend. What would I know him from?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Mm-hmm.
From Friends.
I remember watching him on that sitcom, Rupert's. Very, very popular. It was on NBC on Thursday nights. So Rupert Friend plays 47. That's the only name he has in the movie. It's not like 007 is James Bond. This is 47, and that's it. He is stalking a young woman by the name of Katya, who is being protected by some guy. We don't know quite who he is, but he's played by Zachary Quinto. Now, he's the only one in the movie who I'd ever seen before, because I've seen him in the Star Trek movies. He plays Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in a couple of other things, but like Leonard Nimoy, that's what Zachary Quinto is going to be known as for his entire life, the guy who played Spock.
Yeah.
So they eventually come to an encounter between these two guys, one who is protecting Katya and the other one who is out to kill Katya. But then it turns out that Zachary is the bad guy and Rupert's the good guy.
Oh, wow.
That 47 wasn't out to kill her. He's out to protect her.
So that was the twist?
Also, Zachary is also a hitman, but he has a polymetal layer under his skin, so when you shoot him, he doesn't die. What movie does this remind anybody else of? How about Terminator 2?
Mm-hmm.
That part of the plot is completely ripped off from Terminator 2, which had Arnold Schwarzenegger coming back, and Linda, what was her name?
I don't know.
Terminator 2?
Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton thinks, oh, he's here to kill us all. No, he's here to protect us all because there's a better version of him that's polymetal who's going to chase after them and kill them. Well, that's the Zachary Quinto character in this. So, okay, you've already got the Terminator 2 ripoff. And then the plot goes on to involve a syndicate that wants to get Katya because her father invented these assassin agents in a program that's been disbanded, but now the syndicate wants to start them up again. Does that sound to anybody like the Bourne movies?
Yeah,
it's a
sure.
It's a ripoff of that. That's, oh, these assassins who were bred to kill and kill and kill. No, that's been disbanded. We don't have it. But there are still out there, and here's one of them. That's pure Bourne right there. I will tell you right now, I did not care about any of the characters in this movie. I didn't care if Katya lived or died. I didn't care if 47 lived or died, or the other guy whose name I forget, played by Spock. It doesn't matter. The action sequences, yeah, there are plenty of them, and they're okay, but they're the kind of action sequence that's totally predictable in that the good guy walks into a room with 19 bad guys, The good guy only has to fire 19 shots to kill them all. Meanwhile, the bad guys fire 43,000 shots, and none of them hit the good guy. Yeah.
Is this true?
It's based on a true story, yes. 2 out of 10.
Oof.
For Hitman, Agent 47.
That's rough.
And if they flopped with it in 2007, they are going to flop with it again this year.
It's
going to
be worse.
There will never be another Hitman movie.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Maybe straight to DVD.
I heard Hitman 52 is on the...
no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they could do like Naked Gun thing. Hitman 47 and 4/7 or something and make it a comedy.
There you go.
Maybe. I will tell you, I'm going to spoil the end of the movie for you.
What?
I usually will not spoil a movie for you. But here's how bad this movie is. They go to the credits. After the big fight, and of course, 47 and Katya are alive, and Zachary Quinto, his character, is dead, and all the other bad guys, they're all dead. And then there's an encounter between two people, and one of them ends up dead, and the movie ends, and you think, okay, well, if those are the good guys, I'm glad they won. And then the credits start to roll, and then in the middle of the credits, there's a scene of the guy who was killed in the last scene of the movie, and he's lying on the floor, and then his eyes open.
Oh, my.
He's not dead. He's still alive, and that's how we're going to go with our sequel, which will never be made.
Never be made. Maybe straight to DVD.
2 out of 10 for Hitman, Agent 47. Terrible. Now, I blame you for making me go to see that piece of trash.
I know.
Wow. I'm only hoping that American Ultra was worse.
It's not. It's not worse. It wasn't good, though, but it wasn't bad.
Okay.
American Ultra comes to us written by Max Landis, who has a decent history of writing. He wrote Chronicle, which we talked about because the director of that just did another movie fairly recently. But Chronicle, I actually liked a fair amount. The story of American Ultra starts with one of my least favorite movie cliches. It starts with Jesse Eisenberg handcuffed in an interrogation room. Someone walks in, opens up the manila folder with all the pictures, starts putting them out, and they're like, what happened here? And Jesse Eisenberg, who does not make a brooding villain or brooding at all,
yeah,
good. Jesse Eisenberg looks up and he's like, oh, and then it's essentially the entire movie in like amazingly fast reverse. And it's like, oh, it started here. So you see all these big set pieces and things that are going to come. You sort of see them not spoiled in a huge way, but it definitely takes some of the fun out of the movie.
So you wonder, why did they start with this scene where we're just going to now go back and look at the whole movie? Why don't you just show us those things that happened earlier in order from when they started?
Yes, and the only answer I can come up for that is Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart are boyfriend and girlfriend in this small town in West Virginia, and they are stoners, just constantly smoking pot through the first third of this movie. My only assumption is they wanted to confuse us or make us feel stoned by showing us it's just completely random thing to start off the movie. I don't know.
Okay.
This was billed and shown to be this sort of wacky Jesse Eisenberg's a sleeper CIA agent who is a stoner now and, you know, is activated and has to start killing people.
Wait a minute. He's a stoner who doesn't know that he has secret agent skills?
Right. This is sort of American Ultra, MK Ultra. This is like an MK Ultra program where we've implanted this person and trained him to be a great agent, but we want him to be able to go about day-to-day life so he can infiltrate places. That's the idea behind the program.
Okay.
Well, it's shuttered. That program is shuttered because everyone's going insane. It's Operation Wise Man is what it's called.
So it's another Bourne ripoff.
Yes. Connie Britton is at the head of Operation Wise Man.
Oh, I like her.
And is demoted because of the failure. Everyone goes crazy except for Jesse Eisenberg. Topher Grace plays the up-and-coming CIA agent who's created a rival program. And I wish I could. It's something.
Boy, the casting. How do you put Topher Grace and Jesse Eisenberg in like
a secret agent movie?
Connie Britton. None of it makes any sense.
Kristen Stewart from the Twilight movies?
Yes, she's Jesse Eisenberg's girlfriend.
Okay.
So Topher Grace realizes that Jesse Eisenberg is still out there running around. He says, "I've got to clean up her mess. So I'm going to send in my own band of people." My own ultra program to go kill him.
This is even more of a Bourne ripoff than the other one.
Oh, it's verbatim. With the exception that there are times when it's legitimately funny. There are moments when this movie is funny.
On purpose?
On purpose. It was supposed to be, if you saw Pineapple Express or Kingsman earlier this year, how it's funny but still violent. It was supposed to be that. It tried to be too many things. There were times when it tried to be really heartfelt, and this relationship between Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart. And then there were times it wanted to be big action and just all this craziness. And then John Leguizamo is in it as the drug dealer, Jesse Eisenberg's drug dealer, who also inexplicably runs guns, I guess. I don't, in this small West Virginia town.
Of course he does. You ask anybody who they get their weed from, they'll tell you it's from the guy with the AK-47s.
And Jesse, John Leguizamo is really funny in it. He's the comic relief.
Okay.
In the whole movie. The largest issue is it goes 10 minutes and we're going to be serious action. Okay, here's 5 minutes of comedy. Now here's 10 minutes of sort of like maudlin, soupy, touchy-feely stuff. And then we're back to action. And it doesn't do any one of those things particularly well. Mm. And it feels very disjointed. We were sitting in the theater and it was just, and everyone's expecting this kind of funny movie. It's 10 minutes before anything even remotely funny happens. Mm. And you're just, there's like this awkward, you're looking around. Wait, what's happening here? That being said, it still has moments of fun. The violence is so overly gratuitous that it stops being, it's ridiculous. I mean, they kill people in amazingly interesting ways in this. Jesse Eisenberg, believe it or not, comes across believable in the role of like,
really?
Stoner CIA agent.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Does he have the moves so that you could say,
yes.
Oh, okay, this guy looks like a secret agent. He's
Kristen
acting like it.
Stewart, who I'm not a fan of, I liked in this.
Yeah.
Really liked her character. It was a bit of a throw, but I liked the way that she interacted with him. They seemed to have pretty good chemistry, I thought. It's just, it's disjointed. It tried to be too many things. Connie Britton, Topher Grace. It also has Tony Hale in it. Like, this has a cast that just, you're going to keep recognizing people throughout the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was better than your movie. It's not good, but it's not bad. It's very average because it does essentially three different types of movies. Very average. It's an average comedy, average action movie, and average sort of like romantic comedy.
But all those three combined into one movie doesn't make it for a good movie.
No, but it somehow works at times because when it's working for those brief times, it really works.
Are you recommending it?
No. 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 Don't go see it still. I mean, unless... No, wait for this.
Unless your other choice is Hitman 47.
If somebody says, choose American Ninja or Hitman Agent 47, definitely the American Ultra.
If you have a gift card that's expiring in a movie theater this weekend, go get popcorn. Walk out. That might be the best thing. That might be the best thing if you're looking for a new movie.
0 to 10 it for us.
It's 5.
Okay.
It's perfectly average.
Right.
There's
there in the middle.
Nothing wrong with it.
All right. Now, Jesse Eisenberg is also in another movie that's opening today. It's an indie movie called The End of the Tour. This is a movie that stars Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother and a bunch of other movies as David Foster Wallace. David Foster Wallace is an author who wrote a novel called Infinite Jest back in 1996. I never heard of him either. I don't read fiction. I don't know who he is. I didn't know the name. But in the movie, David Foster Wallace is being profiled by a reporter for Rolling Stone named David Lipsky, who is played by Jesse Eisenberg. And the movie is essentially the two of them as they spend several days together so that Lipsky can gather information for his piece on Wallace. And Lipsky's also an unsuccessful novelist, so maybe he's trying to learn a little something about writing a bestseller because Wallace's book was a huge bestseller. So much so that when he's going on a book tour, he shows up, and lots of people show up at every bookstore or every place he shows to give a little speech.
This book, by the way, just so you know, is nearly 1,000 pages that they're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. A beast.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
David Lipsky sleeps at Wallace's house. He goes with him on these last stops on his book tour. He sees how people react to him, how old friends and women treat him. And the two of them engage in a lot of philosophical conversations. Part of it is Lipsky trying to learn more things about Wallace so he can write this profile for Rolling Stone. Others are just the two of them having conversations about all sorts of things in the world. It's interesting if you like seeing two guys talking, because that's what the movie is. There's no action in this movie at all, other than they're in a rented car and they're driving to the next stop on the book tour. It's interesting to see them through the dynamic of the profiler and the profilee, because I'm sure this happens to lots of people who have these big magazine cover stories written about them, you know, the sort of thing that ends up on the cover of Esquire or GQ or Rolling Stone or any of those kind of magazines, which I also don't read unless it's a good article about somebody and they're online. Like this GQ has a cover story on Stephen Colbert that just came out this week. I read that one online. I didn't get the magazine. So that's the only time I would ever see stuff like that. So it's a little bit interesting to see that. And Wallace, in particular, is really not sure how much of his life he can open up to Lipsky, because he knows that in the end, Lipsky's going to decide what goes in the final piece, and Wallace won't have any say-so in that. So I'm not really fascinated with the Wallace character, but I do think the two of them had pretty good relationship. And I will say this about Jason Segel, who's never really blown me away in much of anything else he's done. He's always just kind of been one of those goofy Seth Rogen-like guys. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's because they were together in Freaks and Geeks. That's how they both broke in.
That's right. That's where they both started on Judd Apatow's TV show. I'm giving this one a 7 out of 10, but only if you can sit through a movie that's about 100 minutes long and basically is just a couple of guys talking. There are other people in the movie, but they're all fairly irrelevant to the story. It's really just these two guys talking, and they're interesting guys, but you have to care about what they're talking about if you're going to be interested in this movie. So okay. I just give you that as a caveat. And then another movie I want to talk about that I saw this week that's opening today is another independent movie. It's called Jimmy's Hall. Now, there have been a whole bunch of movies that have taken place in Ireland that I've really liked. First and foremost amongst those would be Waking Ned Devine.
Oh, that's great.
Which is a wonderful movie. If you've never seen that, that's about a bunch of people in a small Irish town. There are about 50 people in this town. And one of them wins the Irish lottery, the sweepstakes, and wins millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Only problem is he can't collect it because he has died. And so somebody else in the town decides he's going to pretend to be Ned Devine and portray him for when the lottery guy comes for the confirmation. But, of course, everybody else in the town would know he's not Ned Devine, and they can't take the chance that the world will get out. So these two best friends, one of whom is going to pretend to be Ned Devine and the other one, they put on this whole show of getting the entire town to agree for a split, a 50-way split of the money. It's a wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's clever. It's something you've never seen before. That's Waking Ned Devine. I like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I also liked a couple of other movies made in Ireland, one called The Van and one called The Snapper. Those are both made by the same guy whose name I can't recall right now. Those both have Colm Meaney in them. I like his work a lot and movies a lot. So this movie's called Jimmy's Hall. And like those three movies that I just mentioned, it does take you a couple of minutes to attune your ear to the Irish accent. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes they're talking so fast that you don't know what they said. Mm-hmm. But it's okay because you're into it for the spirit of the movie. Here's the plot of Jimmy's Hall. It starts in early 1920s Ireland, after Ireland had a civil war and was able to declare independency from Britain. And in a small town, all these movies take place in small towns in Ireland, Jimmy opens up a building where people can come to dance and read and learn all sorts of things that are not taught in the local parish schools. While the local parish priest is very powerful, and he does not like that this is going on. Doesn't like the music, doesn't like the dancing, doesn't like the stuff that they're talking about. Also, Jimmy is an atheist and has different views of the world than what the parish priest would like everyone in this small town to observe and learn. So he puts a lot of, let's say, pressure on Jimmy and essentially forces him to leave. And Jimmy goes to America and lives in New York for 10 years at a time when the world was falling apart financially, and we had the crash of 1929, and a couple of years later, he ends up going back to Ireland. He misses his mom, who still lives in that small town, and so Jimmy goes back there. And he's not back in town a full day before people are saying, are you going to open up the hall again? Oh, no, I don't think I can do that. Well, you know, of course, he's going to. And, of course, he's going to clash with the parish priest again, which he does. And the clash between them is the same sort of thing you see in movies like Footloose or anything else where there's a powerful religious figure who wants to quash the people who want to have fun and learn about the rest of the world in their small town. It's not goofy like Footloose is. It's interestingly told, and I like the characters, and I like the people who are in this. And if you can get past the Irish accent obstacle, which, as you know, having seen some of these movies, Colin, it is a step that you have to be willing to take.
I wish they would do, like, the preview before in the Irish, like, all the previews with an Irish voiceover.
So you get used to it. Your ear definitely has to get used to that accent. Mm-hmm. Or hang around with people who are actually from Ireland before you go see the movie. One of the two. But I think that this is just a wonderful little movie. It's a movie about a guy and a community trying to fight for learning more than the local authority figures. And it's not just the parish priest, but other people in that town would want them to learn. And in that way, it's very interesting. There are parts of it that are a little bit disturbing. Don't take the kids to see this movie. But it's a nice independent movie, probably a Plaza Frontenac kind of movie. It's called Jimmy's Hall. I give it a 7 out of 10.
Wow.
And of the movies that we reviewed this week, that's the one I would recommend the most.
Okay.
Jimmy's Hall.
And I believe it is only a Plaza Frontenac.
Okay. Any other movie stuff we have to get to today?
Just a few other things. I just mentioned this to you, and I don't want to get too into it, other than to say, when we watch a suspenseful movie, and you can go back to Hitchcock, when we look back on them sometimes, we feel like maybe a pivotal item is put front and center, and they even highlight it with light. It seems so obvious. It's like, of course there's a knife. I see it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason they do that. And these neuroscientists went and they said they were curious about this. So they went and they said, why is this? These suspenseful movies, we think we can look at a screen and see everything that's going on. We all think that. I'm not going to miss anything.
Yeah.
But we do. They found out that suspenseful movies in particular give you tunnel vision on just really almost the faces of the characters and everything else you almost forget. And so I guess decades before this was Hitchcock figured out if he didn't show you, here's the knife or here's the key they need, you were going to miss it. It's one of these things that we see so many movies and you're always curious, why do they do it this way?
Yeah.
I love that scientists went and figured it out. I also wish I could get paid to do these studies.
I think that probably comes into play even more for people who are watching things on smaller screens. And I'm not just talking about instead of watching it on a big movie theater screen, you're watching it on the TV screen in your living room, but people who are watching it on a laptop or a tablet or a phone.
What's the longest video you can watch on your phone? Are you like YouTube length and you're done, or can you watch a TV show?
I can't watch a TV show on my phone.
Okay.
No, I about a YouTube video can do that.
Okay.
How about you?
I watched The Drop on my phone.
What's that?
The movie, The Drop, Dennis Lehane, Tom Hardy was in it. I think you saw it last year. The bar,
Oh, that's the
bar.
One with James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Yes,
James
Gandolfini. Did see that. Yeah. You watched it on your phone.
I watched it on my phone.
How was that experience?
Fine. It's the longest thing I've ever watched on my phone, though, so it was definitely it.
Have you, Ian?
No, never a full-length movie, no.
Dan, have you ever watched a full-length movie on your phone?
No.
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 I just think that's just too small a screen. Now, I will say, I've watched them on my iPad, which is a little bit better.
I've watched them on my laptop.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
That's as small as I can go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was just curious. But
so one of the, I don't know, I think this was a year or two ago on one of our trips, but the phone is about the same size as the airline TVs.
Yeah.
And they were showing Gravity on our flight.
Yeah.
Talk about a movie that you should not see on a 5-inch screen.
No, when that movie came out, both Colin and I said, see this on the largest screen you possibly can. How about 4 inches? Perfect. Perfect if you don't want to see any of the really cool special effects.
Oh, my gosh. We mentioned this. The Emmy Awards aren't that far away, and they released their first teaser on Fox for them. Who's hosting the Emmy Awards?
I have no idea.
Andy Samberg. Samberg.
Oh, because he's on Fox.
He's on Fox.
Does that show get ratings?
What, Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I don't hear anybody ever talk about that.
I like it a lot. I like it a lot.
Is it a hit? Must
it be. It won a Golden Globe its first year.
That doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
That's a participation trophy.
Yeah.
I really like it quite a bit. I mean, it's back. gosh, in 2 weeks, I think.
Okay.
September 20th, Emmys, Andy Samberg.
I have two other things I want to mention here. One of them is last week in this hour, I mentioned that Amazon had a pilot for a new show from Bryan Cranston, Walter White on Breaking Bad. The show is called Sneaky Pete, and it stars Giovanni Ribisi as a guy who gets out of prison. And when he gets out of prison, he is going to owe the mob a lot of money that he does not have. But his cellmate in prison has relatives who might have some money. And since he's a pretty good con man, he's getting out. His cellmate is not. He decides to go see the grandparents of his cellmate and pretend he's them. Oh, I haven't seen you in 20 years. I'm home, Grandma and Grandpa. How are you? And hopefully they'll have enough money that he can con them out of so that he can pay off whoever the mafia figure is that he owes the money to. I'm not going to tell you anything more about this, but to tell you, go on Amazon and watch this thing. It's called Sneaky Pete. It's just the pilot, and then after you watch it, Amazon has the thing where they come out with the pilots, and you get to choose the ones that you think are good enough that they should make more episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, the TV networks don't give you any input into pilot season. They put things on the air that they think are going to work, and 90% of the things that the Hollywood geniuses choose fail. Every year, 90% of new television shows fail. Mm-hmm. So Amazon said, well, why don't we actually let people watch this and tell us which ones they like and which ones they don't like, and then if the ones that they like, we will make more of them. So you can do that. So I'm going to recommend that you go and watch it. I watched it with my family this week. We really liked it. It had the same kind of feel of a Breaking Bad or a Mad Men or some of these other really well-told, well-photographed, well-acted shows. It's called Sneaky Pete. It's on Amazon.com, instant video. You can watch it for free, and then you can rate it. And if you like it, maybe we'll get some more episodes of it eventually.
There we go.
And the other thing I had to ask you is, have you seen the trailer for the new Matt Damon movie, The Martian?
I've seen all of these trailers.
Okay.
This has been one of the best marketing campaigns I can remember.
I just watched the trailer last night, and I usually don't watch trailers because...
Trailer 2, the one with the rock music in the background, or the more somber first trailer?
I don't know.
Okay. It's two trailers. They paint a very different picture.
It did have some rock and roll in it.
Then that's the second one.
Okay. I almost never will watch a trailer of a movie that I'm looking forward to seeing because I don't want to have it spoiled for me. Mm-hmm. And when I go to the press screenings, I usually don't know anything about the movie before I walk in other than a little bit about the plot and who's in it.
That's why I could convince him to go see Hitman, Agent 47.
Yeah, that's right. I was blown away by the trailer for The Martian, and I cannot wait for this movie to come out.
And the cast is huge. They've done this very well. This is based on a best-selling book that's amazingly well-researched. This guy spoke with NASA, all sorts of people trying to figure out how to make this book accurate. The broadest stroke I can paint this movie with, humans are returning to Mars for another mission. We've already been to Mars. While they're there on this trip, they have to cut it short because a serious storm rolls up. Matt Damon is one of these astronauts. He gets left behind. They think he's dead. And that's it. I'm not going to say anything else.
Yep.
They've been promoting this movie now really seriously for probably about 2 months. And they've got, if you go to, I think it's themartianmovie.com, mm-hmm. you can see they have like a meet the crew of this ship. And they've done all these things in character to like get you to feel like you know this crew as you would, because if we ever went to Mars, you know it would be broadcast worldwide. And
yes.
There'd be shows and they'd be doing things. It has that sort of feel.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this quite a bit.
Here's some of the cast. Matt Damon, Jessica Chastain, Kristen Wiig, Kate Mara, Jeff Daniels, Donald Glover, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Right there, that's a pretty solid cast
yes.
of characters. So that's not coming out until the first weekend of October.
Yes.
But it looks really, really good. I don't mean it just looks like, wow, I'm interested in that plot. I mean the look of it is really, really good.
And they kept Andy Weir, the writer of the book, around throughout the entire writing process, I believe, the screenplay.
Directed by Ridley Scott. Didn't he do Alien?
He did, but then he also did Prometheus. We're hoping it's more like Alien yeah. and less like Prometheus.
Yeah. All right, Colin, we'll see you in the newsroom in about 20 minutes.